It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Biden on the record. Good afternoon and welcome to the broadcast. President Biden gave a rare primetime interview to CNN last night and used the occasion to tout his accomplishments, with those crucial midterms now less than a month away.
Name me a president in recent history that's gotten as much done as I have in the first 2 years. Not a joke. You may not like what I got done, but the vast majority of the American people do like what I got done.
The president says he doesn't think there will be a recession, but if there is one, it'll be short-lived. He spent most of last night focused on one man, Russian ruler Vladimir Putin.
I think he is a rational actor who's miscalculated significantly.
The president accused Putin of playing with fire on a level not seen since the Cuban Missile Crisis.
He, in fact, cannot continue with impunity to talk about the use of a tactical nuclear weapon as if that's a rational thing to do. Mistakes get made, and it could end in Armageddon.
Putin has threatened to use nukes to regain lost ground in war-torn Ukraine. With Election Day just 27 days away, the latest Fox News Battleground Tracker poll shows Republicans remain in the driver's seat to take back the House, while control of the Senate remains up in the air. Pennsylvania Senate candidate Dr. Mehmet Oz continues to make crime his signature campaign issue.
There's a reason why the Fraternal Order of Police for the entire state of Pennsylvania endorsed me, and they endorsed me unanimously. John Fetterman has been blocking their efforts to protect the people of Pennsylvania. There's a lawlessness that permeates the very fabric of Philadelphia now.
Self-described socialist Bernie Sanders says Democrats need to spend less time talking about abortion and take the fight directly to Republicans on the economy.
People think that Republicans are going to do better job for them than Democrats. What we have got to do is take the attack to Republicans on the economy. Don't be on the defensive. You got 60% of the people in this country who are living paycheck to paycheck. Millions are working for starvation wages.
The GOP has made the Biden economy the most pressing issue in this election, arguing the policies of this president have directly led to record high inflation. A new survey from LendingTree shows just how much inflation is impacting the lives of everyday Americans. 32% of you and I have had to pay a bill late in the past 6 months. 6 in 10 say we simply do not have enough money in the bank. 40% admit we're struggling more today paying our bills than we were this time last year. When the president took office, inflation was at 1.7%. Today it's at 8.3%. The president wasn't asked a single question last night about the border crisis during that 15-minute primetime interview. This despite so-called sanctuary cities like New York facing fiscal ruin. They're asking for federal help now to deal with the flood of migrants who arrive on a near daily basis. New York Congresswoman Nicole Maliotakis.
This is going to cost our city about $1 billion just to start. The reality is that the president continues to ignore the border crisis that he created.
Mayor Eric Adams says the migrant population in New York City could soon top 75,000. He's opened up emergency shelters for asylum seekers in all 5 boroughs of the Big Apple. The FBI reportedly offered $1 million for the discredited Steele dossier, that debunked document that led to the Trump-Russia collusion hoax. Former British intelligence officer Christopher Steele made salacious allegations in an attempt to discredit the Trump campaign. Kentucky Congressman James Comer says this is yet another black eye for the FBI.
People need to be held accountable for what the country went through for over 2 years with respect to the Democrats trying to impeach Trump and the national mainstream media trying to harass Trump over Russian collusion, when we now know without a shadow of a doubt it was based on the Steele dossier, which is complete fiction.
The Steele dossier was used by the FBI to monitor Trump and fuel the multi-year investigation into the former president. A Florida jury begins deliberations today to decide whether Parkland school shooter Nicholas Cruz should be put to death or spend the rest of his life in prison.
Prosecutors described the horrors of Valentine's Day 2018. The lead attorney for the state repeatedly mentioned victims by name.
Helen Ramsey and Nicholas Durrett, who were hiding when they were killed.
The defense has tried to paint their client in a sympathetic light, saying he was poisoned in the womb and doomed from the start.
A broken, brain-damaged, mentally ill young man.
Their only goal at this point, persuading at least one juror to spare his life.
Christian Benavides reporting. Still to come on the Noon Report, a midweek edition. Senate candidates stroke recovery. Justice denied for pro-lifers and election results in Pennsylvania. Don't expect any on election night.
Well, good afternoon to all. Enjoy that warm air because we've got a change ahead wrought by a cold front. Going to bring us rain, wind, and much cooler air moving forward. I'll have forecast details coming up in 10.
All right, we will see you then. Thank you, Kevin Williams. Pennsylvania U.S. Senate candidate John Fetterman admitted today he still struggles to understand questions and speak clearly following a stroke he suffered back in May.
And every now and then I'll miss a word, every now and then. Or sometimes I'll maybe mush two words together.
In an interview with NBC's Dasha Burns, the Democratic candidate had trouble finding his verbal footing.
It did seem that he had a hard time understanding our conversations.
Fetterman responded to questions by reading captions on a computer screen. He admits his recent medical scare is a game changer.
It changes everything.
Yeah.
Everything about it has changed. Basically having a conversation with your wife to having a conversation with your children.
Because of his stroke, doctors have implemented a pacemaker in Fetterman's heart, which alters the way he communicates. Four people are dead after a two-vehicle crash Tuesday afternoon in Royalton, New York. That's in Niagara County. A car and an RV collided at an intersection. The cause of the crash still under investigation. One of those vehicles, a motorhome, reduced to a pile of rubble. Three SWAT team members serving an arrest warrant this morning were hurt. The suspect is dead after another mass shooting in Philadelphia.
23, we got two SWAT officers shot. We're en route to Jefferson Hospital. They're going to find them right now. 123, all right, let them know. I'm shot in the head. My partner shot in the leg.
A third SWAT officer was shot in the chest. They're listed in stable condition at the hospital. The suspect, a 19-year-old, was wanted for murder in Philadelphia. It's been 127 days since a pro-life center was firebombed by a pro-choice group near Buffalo. Still no arrests made. 127 days later. Now, those on the front lines of the fight to preserve life accuse New York State officials of picking on crisis pregnancy centers.
They're standing by and watching pro-life organizations like Compass Care be attacked.
That's Compass Care CEO Jim Harden. He says the attack on his clinic in early June was met with hardly a word of condemnation from Governor Hochul.
And when we were attacked, 6 days later, Hochul came out and signed a bill at a press conference to investigate pro-life pregnancy centers, not the arsonist and the Jane's Revenge terrorist group that's attacking us all over the country.
The radical abortion rights group Jane's Revenge took responsibility for that act of domestic terrorism. Harden accuses Governor Hochul of being complicit in these crimes.
And at the press conference, she called pro-life people Neanderthals. And this was just the beginning. We have a timeline, a litany of attacks, so over 70 attacks on pro-life pregnancy centers all over the country, and zero arrest.
Pro-life centers like Compass Care were targeted because of the Supreme Court ruling that overturned Roe. Two Amherst firefighters were injured in the June firebombing at Compass Care. A Canadian man has lost his life after falling while attempting to climb Ithaca Falls in central New York. The 35-year-old from Ontario was planning to take a photo once he got to the top, but he wound up slipping. Police are calling it a tragic accident there in Ithaca. Pennsylvania election officials anticipating delays in the results of this year's midterms, much like what we witnessed 2 years ago in the 2020 presidential election.
We anticipate, once again, Pennsylvania will not have unofficial results on election night.
Unofficial results will be available within a few days.
That is Acting Secretary of State Lee Chapman. She says the longer wait reflects local efforts to count every vote in all 67 counties.
Counties are ready to run a secure, accessible election. My job is to ensure that every eligible voter in Pennsylvania can register to vote, cast their ballot, and have it counted.
Pennsylvanians have until October 24th to register to vote. The deadline to apply for a mail-in ballot is November 1st. The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that mail-in ballots that are not dated should not count in Pennsylvania. More than a million of these ballots have been requested for the November midterms, 75% of them requested by Democrats. Congressman Glenn Thompson says a vote for Josh Shapiro on Election Day is a vote for Tom Wolf 3.0.
A vote for Shapiro is a vote for four more years of a Tom Wolf administration.
Nonetheless, the Democratic Attorney General has a sizable lead in the governor's race over his Republican rival, conservative firebrand Doug Mastriano. Sheriffs across New York expressing their reservations about the state's new controversial concealed carry law. We get more on that from Family Life's Jeremy Miller.
Yeah, that's right. Many sheriffs say they've never had a gun-related crime with a legal gun owner, and they're concerned law-abiding citizens are being treated unfairly with a law that penalizes them. The law expands requirements for a permit and restricts where guns can be carried. It's being challenged in federal court right now, and a judge has suspended provisions like submitting 3 years worth of social media data and providing good moral character, but the state is appealing that decision. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. State police have arrested a Jefferson County, New York man who they say faked his own son's death to get donations. 30-year-old Caleb Stevens of Adams reportedly told people his 4-year-old son had passed away from leukemia and that he needed money to cover the funeral expenses. Stephen's son is very much alive today. Now the father's facing felony charges. Power problems in Pennsylvania. The Public Utility Commission says outages were up last year. How come? Here's Family Life's Terry Diener.
A total of 63 reportable outage events during 2021 disrupted electric service to residents and businesses across the state. It's the highest number of incidents since the PUC began collecting that data in 1993. Those outages impacted 1.9 million customers. All of the outages were related to the impact of weather on the state's power grid, marking a substantial increase over previous years. The PUC's latest report details reliability information for the state's 11 electric distribution companies. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Okay, thank you, Terry. Hunters are gearing up for the start of bear season in Pennsylvania. Last year, sportsmen harvested more than 3,600 bears. That's the fifth most ever. The largest was a 722-pound bear taken in Franklin County. That's in the south-central part of the state. Bear season starts Saturday in the Keystone State. Well, like everything else these days, the cost of a Thanksgiving Day turkey is going up.
The price of turkeys alone has gone up about 20%. From last year.
That is Amanda Palm with the New York Farm Bureau.
Not as many turkeys are available this year for whatever the reasons, the repercussions, there just isn't the availability of the birds, so the price has gone up.
Palm blames inflation, supply chain issues, and the avian flu for the rise in the cost of a turkey. Last year, a 16-pound turkey cost on average of $25, and you can expect to pay even more this year. We're coming up on 14 past the hour. Let's talk sports next on the Family Life Noon Report.
Good afternoon. I'm Randy Snavely. Bob Garrett Cole pitched like an ace, and the Yankees scored four unanswered runs to beat Cleveland 4-1 in Game 1 of their American League Division Series. Cole gave up a home run in the first, but nothing else afterwards. He struck out 8 over 6 and a third innings, and the Bronx Bombers got home runs from Harrison Bader and Anthony Rizzo. They grab a 1-0 lead in this best of 5 series. The Philadelphia Phillies were the only road team to win yesterday as they held on to knock off the defending champs, Atlanta, 7-6. The Phils raced out to a 7-1 lead before the Braves stormed back with Matt Olson three-run home run in the ninth inning, but Atlanta couldn't get any closer than that. They will play game two this afternoon. Kyle Wright gets the ball for the Braves. He'll be opposed by Zach Wheeler. The most dramatic game by far had to be in Houston. Seattle held a 6-2 lead at one point in the contest, and they led 7-5 going into the ninth inning. But one swing of the bat by Yordan Alvarez changed all of that. A walk-off three-run shot. The Astros come all the way back to take game one in their series. Yuri Gurriel and Alex Bregman also went deep for Houston. Out west, the Dodgers scored 5 runs in the first 3 innings of their contest, and then they held on to beat San Diego by a 5-3 score. On the ice, Mika Zibanejad helped the Rangers to their first win of the season, scoring twice to lead New York to a 3-1 win over the Tampa Bay Lightning, and the Vegas Golden Knights edged the LA Kings 4-3. That is a look at sports.
All right, thank you very much, Randy Snavely. Still to come on the Noon Report for a Wednesday, remembering the late, great Angela Lansbury, asteroid-altering effort, and a former Democratic presidential candidate is explaining why she left the party.
Welcome to Breakpoint, a daily look at an ever-changing culture through the lens of unchanging truth. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. Earlier this year, The Economist reported that America's homeless population has risen by a rate of just under 6% nationwide. In San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Seattle, that rate is much higher. According to some estimates, half of America's unsheltered homeless population live in California. Christopher Rufo in the Discovery Institute project Homelessness writes this, quote, "It's emotionally jarring. How's it possible that more than 500,000 Americans are sleeping on the streets in tents and in emergency shelters? Governments have mobilized billions of dollars to solve homelessness, but there are more tents on the streets than ever." Well, what has happened? Clearly, policy is a major factor. Over the last few years, many major cities have leaned exclusively on a housing-first model. This model makes getting homeless populations off the streets and into housing priority number one, even if it costs billions of dollars. But behind the policy is an expansive and flawed worldview that assumes that issues facing the homeless population have less to do with individual decisions and everything to do with systemic injustices. In this view, racism, capitalism, landlords, employers have created a world where homelessness is essentially random. It could happen to anyone, as Rufo describes it, removing any sense of fault or responsibility from the problem. Now, of course, many times chance and injustice do land people on the streets. However, exclusively blaming social injustices ignores two of the most critical factors that are driving homelessness right now, drug addiction and mental illness. The result is a deadly triangle of public policy. Drugs have been decriminalized, leading to a flush of cheap opioids in vulnerable areas. Open-air camps grow unrestricted. Lawmakers just have to look the other way. Now, these policies stem from an inadequate view of human nature. How much of homelessness is really chance? And how much of it is choices? How can we humanize people that are struggling while still acknowledging the reality of addictions and mental illness? What about people who won't change despite efforts taken on their behalf? Faced with all these problems, it's easy to retreat either into callousness or else the simplistic, ineffective policies of unlimited compassion. A Christian worldview has the ability to split the difference. Common sense policy changes are needed. While enforcing the law, cities should designate safe ground areas with emergency shelter, even as they partner with local churches and nonprofits to deliver health and social services and long-term resources to those who need it the most. All of these changes, however, have to be done in concert with what Rufo calls a philosophy of transformation. This philosophy points to what's really behind this, springing from an idea that homelessness is not inevitable and that real help is really possible, but it depends on far more than just someone's economic status. As Alan Graham, the founder of the most successful restoration project for the homeless in America, puts it, homelessness is at root a catastrophic loss of relationships. Now, if that's true, then the solution must always revolve around re-engagement with relationships, with families, with communities, and all the values that spring from that: responsibility, accountability, restoration, grace, connection. And to fill these needs, there's not a community better situated than local churches and local nonprofits. It all starts with a view of people that take seriously their status as image bearers of God. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. Today's Breakpoint was co-authored by Casey Leander. For more resources to live like a Christian in this cultural moment, go to ColsonCenter.org.
20 past the hour, Kevin Williams next.
Here is your family life weather forecast. Our call for this afternoon, warm, partial sunshine, clouding up though across western New York and northwest Pennsylvania with a stray shower. High temperatures nearing 70. For tonight, mostly cloudy, becoming very breezy for some, and then a soaking rain will spread from west to east across the area late tonight and tomorrow with embedded thunder. Low temps tonight, mild 50s, the high tomorrow 60s, and cool day Friday with a sun cloud mix, maybe a brief shower off the lakes, and high temps in the 50s to near 60.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. This right here is the Noon Report. I'm Bob Price. We're so glad you've joined us today. Here's what's happening Wednesday, the 12th of October. President Biden talked last night about the state of the economy during a 15-minute interview with CNN. He told anchorman Jake Tapper that if there is a recession, it'll be short-lived.
Should the American people prepare for a recession?
No, I don't think there will be a recession. If it is, it'll be a very slight recession.
You just said that a slight recession is possible.
So it is possible. Look, it's possible. I don't anticipate it. What I do think, look, we talk about the impact on families. The families are, they have reason to be concerned about energy prices. They have reason to be concerned about a whole range of issues.
On the foreign relations front, the president called out Saudi Arabia, arguing it is time for the U.S. to recalibrate our relationship with the Desert Kingdom. This follows the Saudis' decision to cut oil production.
When the House and Senate gets back, there's going to be some consequences for what they've done.
What kind of consequences?
I'm not going to get into what I'd consider and what I have in mind, but there will be consequences.
Gas prices have risen 20 cents a gallon in just the past month, and it will likely increase even more with OPEC's decision to cut production. Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton says the president's own domestic energy policies is what has led to this moment.
The official stated policy of Joe Biden on the campaign trail and since he's been in office to do everything he can to hurt fossil fuel production.
Cotton says Mr. Biden's war on fossil fuels has created not just an economic crisis at home, but a national security crisis abroad.
Ronald Reagan in the 1980s was able to enlist Saudi Arabia to keep oil prices low, which devastated Soviet Russia's economy. Why can't Joe Biden do that with the Saudis to Putin's Russia?
Regarding Putin, Biden told CNN last night the Russian ruler is a, quote, miscalculated, rational actor in Ukraine. He added he does not think that Putin will resort to using nuclear weapons in Ukraine, but even just talking about it, said the president, would have disastrous consequences. Former Democratic presidential candidate Tulsi Gabbard has left the party. She announced on Twitter Tuesday that today's Democratic Party is under the complete control of an elitist cabal of warmongers, her words. Last night, Gabbard explained more her decision to part ways with the Democratic Party during an appearance on the Tucker Carlson program.
People are afraid to speak the truth. They're afraid to exercise their right to free speech because, hey, you might lose your job, you might be canceled, you might be trashed.
Gabbard accused the Democratic Party in the year 2022 of being driven by cowardly wokeness. John Fetterman's Democratic presidential campaign in Pennsylvania says he is as healthy as a horse, but is he fit to serve after suffering a stroke 5 months ago? The lieutenant governor mumbled and jumbled his words again in an interview yesterday with NBC News.
I always thought I was pretty empathetic. Empathetic. That's an example of the stroke. Empathetic.
CBS News medical correspondent Dr. David Agus.
Most of the recovery after a stroke happens in the first 3 months or so. He's at month 5. Can more recovery happen? It's certainly possible, but it's certainly not guaranteed.
Fetterman used a closed captioning device to read the questions that were being asked to him by NBC News. Well, the tributes continue to pour in for the late great actress and star of the stage, screen, and television, Angela Lansbury.
What still doesn't make any sense is why
was the body placed in that particular spot.
Lansbury played murder mystery writer Jessica Fletcher on the hit CBS series Murder, She Wrote for 12 years. She also starred in dozens of movies and won 9 Tony Awards.
All we need a little Christmas.
Angela Lansbury would have been 97 this Sunday. We're coming up on 25 past the hour, and this is the Noon Report on Family Life.
Welcome back to another edition of Real Answers with Christopher Anderson. Wednesdays during the Noon Report, we tackle the tough topics facing today's families with licensed mental health counselor Christopher Anderson. And Chris, with the holidays fast approaching, it's a good time to discuss family relations, in particular, what to do when there's tension with the in-laws.
Oh, boy, this could really be a loaded topic of discussion, couldn't it? And, Brandon, it's definitely, again, a tough topic. It's choppy waters to navigate as a married couple. And like you said, the holidays can be really difficult.
Well, against that background, where do we start in discussing this difficult topic?
I think it's important to keep a couple things in mind, a couple of biblical principles right from the start with this topic. And the first is that we are to honor our parents. And the second is to remember that we are to leave our parents and cleave or join up with our spouse to create our own family. This can be very difficult for all involved, and we should remember, too, that we have a fallen nature, and we all have to work against that and turning that over to the Lord to help us to become more Christ-like. And when we meet up with conflict in our in-law family experiences, that's a time when we really need to do that for sure. But let's also first discuss the biblical command to honor our parents and what it does not mean, first of all. And as an adult, especially as a married adult, it does not mean doing everything our parents tell us to do, especially if what they're trying to tell us to do is something that's sinful, especially if we've got parents that aren't followers of Christ. So what it does mean to remember is that in a healthy family of origin situation, our parents can be a treasure trove of wisdom. Now, again, if you come from a family background that is not necessarily biblical, or if your parents aren't Christian, that doesn't mean that they don't have any wisdom. It just means that you'll have to make sure that you take some extra precaution in holding up what they are recommending or any kind of information or kind of recommendations you're getting from those parents. Got to hold that up to the authority of Scripture.
Some very good explanations there, Chris. But what happens when the conflict does break out? What do married couples need to do in those cases?
Well, the first thing to keep in mind is that all of us get set in our ways. We all have a set of preferences, and change is not usually easy, even when it's a very positive change. So the interesting thing is our bodies, our minds don't easily distinguish between positive stress, which is called eustress, and negative stress or distress. Therefore, even when we're blending our families, and even when that process goes relatively smoothly with nobody intentionally trying to cause conflict, that can still be a stressful situation. But there are often elements of competition with in-laws, particularly daughters and mother-in-laws, that are usually just a reflection of patterns of habit being challenged due to the nature of family blending. So that's not necessarily an unusual situation. But it is not always the case. There can be cases where the conflict may include components of intentionality, or even if the conflict remains, let's say, unintentional, but it's clearly having a detrimental impact on the marriage, then the married couple needs to really communicate clearly about what to do in this situation. The husband, even if it's his parents or his parent that is causing the problem, needs to be willing to help protect his wife and to set some boundaries. In other words, he's got to be willing to go to bat for his wife and kind of help protect her in these types of situations. And that can be difficult. The husband needs to be willing, with full cooperation of his wife, to again communicate respectfully and clearly to his parents that certain behaviors or certain boundaries must be respected. Again, this is not being disrespectful to his parents, even though it may be difficult for them to hear. He's had the reins passed to him in marriage, and he is now in charge of his own family. And that's a very biblical, godly concept. So this type of protecting behavior really is the responsibility of the husband. Even if this strategy causes some additional tension in the short term, you continue to love the parents, maintain consistency in the application of boundaries. And I think over time, in a lot of cases, especially if the parents are believers, they're going to not only accept the boundaries, but it's really going to help keep the peace. Especially with the spirits leading in their hearts, they will be willing to move on from the conflict and respect the married couple's new identity. it might not always be the case or come across that easily, especially if the in-laws are not Christian. But again, continuing to be respectful in the communication and hold firm to those boundaries really will help these types of situations.
You've been listening to another edition of Real Answers with Christopher Anderson. Wednesdays during the Noon Report, we tackle the tough topics facing today's families with Christian counselor Christopher Anderson.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much. Download all our Real Answers podcast at familylife.org.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. We're tracking a dynamic cold front well endowed with moisture that's going to bring rain and wind later tonight and tomorrow, a soaking rain with thunder possibility as well. The kind of a system that's going to knock some leaves off those trees, unfortunately. The combination of wind and rain can do that. What a beautiful fall color season it has been so far. Our call for this afternoon, warm, partial sunshine, clouding up, though, across western New York and northwest Pennsylvania with a stray shower. High temperatures nearing 70. For tonight, mostly cloudy, becoming very breezy for some. Be a shower or two early for some, and then a soaking rain will spread from west to east across the area late tonight and tomorrow with embedded thunder. Low temps tonight, mild 50s, the high tomorrow 60s, and cool day Friday with a sun-cloud mix, maybe a brief shower off the lakes, and high temps in the 50s to near 60.
All right, Kevin, thank you. Finally, the new NASA says last month's asteroid-altering galactic grand slam between a space rock and a refrigerator-sized spacecraft 7 million miles from Earth was a huge success.
It was expected to be a huge success if it only slowed the orbit by about 10 minutes, but it actually slowed it by 32 minutes.
In other words, bullseye, says NASA Administrator Bill Nelson. He says the mission shows that the space agency is ready for whatever the universe throws at us. Correspondent Peter King.
The DART spacecraft's mission was to crash into the asteroid to divert its path. NASA Administrator Bill Nelson.
DART successfully changed the targeted asteroid's trajectory.
That rock wasn't headed toward us, but DART's mission shows that, as science fiction has shown us for decades, it is possible in science fact to save the Earth if need be.
Mission accomplished. 7 million miles from Earth. How about that? That's the world we live in. Wednesday, the 12th day of October. I'm Bob Price. Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report. Heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.